to begin this evening, as you know, a lot has changed in the past week as the coronavirus has brought many large public gatherings to a halt, and our own Hindsight Festival in Kells, which was planned for next weekend, is no exception, as we've had to call it off in the interests of public health. Keep an eye though on hinterland.ie, where we're going to be posting a curtailed virtual festival with some of the talks and other related material. But we're going to bring you now one of the stories that we plan to cover at that festival next weekend. This story is from the height of the War of Independence. It involves the IRA, an alleged informer, and an execution, which illustrates the kind of local conflicts that took place between the IRA and ordinary citizens. We came across it in the military archives at Cathal Brua Barracks in Dublin, amongst the brigade activity reports associated with the Military Services Pension Collection, a valuable resource which, of course, we've drawn from many times before during this decade of centenaries on this programme. I'm joined by Dr. Liam McNiff, an historian and author who has been researching this episode. Liam, you're very, very welcome indeed.
Thank you.
Now, the central figure in this story is a man named John Harrison, although he appears in the brigade activity reports as John Harris. Who was he? Why was he targeted by the IRA?
John Harrison was a 54-year-old Methodist farmer from Drumreilly, townland a few miles outside Ballinamore in Leitrim. The cold facts are that he was actually taken out by the local IRA. They had the idea that he was an informer or a spy, and he was shot. But like most things, there's background to it. The IRA had imposed an arms levy on farmers the previous October. Harrison had about 40 acres. He was levied £1.
But and this was to be used to buy weapons
and fund the war, I suppose. And he refused to pay it. So then they went to take one of his best cows, and he was armed and he shot. But they managed to take the cow. Now, it's unclear exactly how it was sorted. It may have been the intervention of a Protestant clergyman, but he paid the pound. He got his cow back. Now, that was in October and things seemed to settle down. But by the following April, his mail was intercepted. Two things. One account says it was the railway. Frequently, the local IRA interrupted the railway and got the mail. Mm. Or it could be his daughter was going to town. But in any event...
Right. OK, we have that aspect or that element of the story. We're going to hear from the military archives. And in the Leitrim Brigade Activity Report, the local battalion commandant, Sean O'Farrell, describes how Harrison, who, as I say, he mistakenly calls Harris, was exposed, at least according to this account, as an informer.
He was under suspicion for some time previously, and a girl was suspected of carrying dispatches for him to the Crown Forces at Ballinamore. The girl was searched one evening as she was going into Ballinamore, and in her bag was discovered an unaddressed letter. When questioned, she stated that the letter was for a man named Davidson, the postmaster in Ballinamore. When the letter was read, it contained a report from Harris to the police, and contained the names of members of the local company whom he stated raided his house some time previously. He was taken out that night and executed.
And we'll have more details on that from another entry into that brigade activity report. The words there of Sean O'Farrell, a local battalion commandant. The girl in question isn't named, but we can assume it was Harrison's daughter.
Yeah, we're not sure actually. Harrison, he actually had 12 children ranging from 6 months to 15 years. And they were all in the house when they came. And to protect them, he gave himself up, basically.
Now, it's important to say that accounts in the military archives, they're extremely valuable. They're gold dust. Yeah. But they can't always be taken as gospel. And any good historian will cross-reference them with other sources. So what did you find out about Harris's identification as an informer? What kind of detail can you give us on that?
Interesting. Again, when you read the different accounts, you get different angles on it. His wife claimed till her death in 1935, talking to friends locally, that her husband was totally innocent, that he'd done absolutely nothing wrong. The IRA accounts, brigade accounts and so on say that he gave information. Now, unlike Latimer, who was another Protestant killed a few miles previously, a few miles away, about a few weeks previously, Latimer, that other man, was supposed to have given information that allowed the Black and Tans military to ambush six IRA and kill them. In our case with Harrison, there was no actual, we never got proof. I'm not saying he wasn't a spy or informer or that he was, but nobody ever got proof of what he was supposed to have given. The nearest we got is what you got in that excerpt where it said he told the name of the people who, you know, raided his farm for his cow.
So, in other words, he identified to the RIC.
See, that's what
a
he
number
was,
of yes. local IRA.
Now, there was a sign put around his neck, you know, the usual, spy and informer, beware.
I mean, you have to assume also that the local RIC, this wouldn't have been particularly news to the local RIC. They would have known exactly who the local IRA
man. They would, exactly.
Okay, let's hear another extract from that Leitrim Brigade Activity Report. This is for the 22nd of April, 1921. And here the company captain, Thomas Smith, takes up the story of the killing of John Harrison.
We took different positions around the house, except three men who were left on sentry about 200 yards away on the roadway. We demanded admittance in the name of the IRA, and he was so long and making so much noise, we got suspicious of his movements. We kept banging at both doorways, when next a shot rang out, and again two or three more. So I gave the order, each man two rounds. We smashed the windows. I gave a second order, each man two rounds more, so that we would frighten him. But he replied with about five rounds rapid. So we understood he was either armed with a rifle or a revolver. Each man reloaded with the third order, two more rounds. We had everything broken then. I called out to surrender, or we would blow up his house. He surrendered, having put a short service rifle on the window and about 20 rounds of ammunition.
Now, Liam, that's from the company captain, Thomas Smith, from that Leitrim Brigade Activity Report. I remember when I read that, I made the assumption that he was in the house of his own, and then I realised, hang on, I checked his the 1911 census and realised that there were children. He was not in the house on his own.
And in fact, when you read the different accounts, I went through all the newspapers, North and South, referring to it. And like the Northern one, something like the Belfast Newsletter, would highlight the fact that he, like his head was blown away. And they would highlight something like that, the brutality of it. Whereas other papers would give a more neutral stance on it. But he was in a house with 12 children and his wife. And in fact, she was up nursing two sick children. And they were told to stay in the house for an hour, and his 16-year-old son found him. And what's interesting, they walked him right, because a local man helped me find the actual area, they walked him just out of his town land to shoot him.
Why was that?
I don't know whether it was respect that he wanted to kill him on his own land, but they just walked him across a little bridge which was dividing one town land from another, and just across it, and then shot him.
And presumably the reason why he gave himself up was because when they threatened to bomb the house or burn the house, he realised that his children, there was a chance that his children and his wife would die as
and
well.
And the other thing, as far as I can gather, I'm not positive, but it was a thatched house. And I mean, if they had set fire or anything, but there definitely was a gun battle.
It would have gone up very quickly. Yeah. Let's hear another extract from the Brigade Activity Report. Again, this is the company captain, Thomas Smith, continuing the story of the execution of John Harrison.
I asked him to open the door, and he did so. John Maguire and Paddy Martin got in the back window at the same time. He begged us not to shoot him. I said we had to carry out our orders. We told him he had to come with us. We also told him he needed no coat. So, we brought him about 300 yards down towards the bog. I asked him was there any reason why he shouldn't be executed, as he was both spying and informing. He never made an answer. The three men who fired the shots were volunteer Patrick Martin, volunteer James McTighe, and volunteer John Maguire. I myself, as captain, placed a label with cord around his neck. Shot as spy and informer. Beware.
The level of detail there is very interesting, because you don't often in any of these reports have the men who were actually responsible, who were in the firing squad, and there normally were about three IRA men in each of these firing squads, identified. Part of the reason for that is because this is to assist people in assigning pensions subsequently to IRA men, and obviously it enhances your pension application if you were involved in a firing squad.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to keep that in mind, because there were people interviewed by local historians and local county library and things years later, and they gave a somewhat different account and unofficially would point the finger at a different person pulling the trigger. So it's interesting. I nearly feel if you were kind of given the evidence years later in the cold light of no crisis, you might be minimising that you had pulled the trigger. Whereas if you're given it at the time looking for a pension, you're going to be maximising it.
Hmm. What was the local reaction to Harrison's death?
The shock. Now, it wasn't. In fact, there was a Frank Darcy interviewed years later. He would have been about 12 at the time. But he was interviewed years later. And he said it was, you know, there were total shock. People, he was regarded as an inoffensive farmer. Now, on the other hand, Darcy did say, look, if we were given information, maybe that caused other people's deaths.
Hmm.
But the fact, if you like, that unlike the Latimer man, who was accused of giving the information that caused six IRA to be killed 4 weeks earlier.
That was,
Selton Hill, exactly.
Selton Hill,
you know, yeah. And there were six people killed, IRA killed, and he was responsible, he was, and that was it. This man, if you like, there was no obvious evidence. But remember, it's in that time when six IRA have been killed, three big Republican funerals in Ballinamore, the Tans have burned down the local hall and a hall in Aughwillan. Like, there's a boycott on Catholic and Protestant traders who are continuing to keep the shops open when the local IRA wanted a boycott to close it to put pressure on England about how prisoners, IRA prisoners, were being treated. So no more than now, all the norms are gone out.
And it's also 1921, the first half of 1921, when paranoia reigned amongst the IRA because the British were beginning to make intelligence inroads as well. Is there any indication that Harrison was targeted specifically because he was a Protestant?
I don't think so. But if you put, I mean, common sense would dictate that Protestants, by their nature, would not have been happy with the struggle for independence. Their sympathy would have been with England. And also, I mean, the fact that Harrison didn't want to give the levy of £1 put him on the wrong side. Now, the other point is there were Catholics who were, if anyone got in the place of the IRA, there was a McCabe man, Catholic, who was joining the RIC, was warned twice not to, decided he'd still join. On his way to the railway in Ballinamore to get to Dublin to the depot, he was shot, and his leg so badly shot it had to be amputated. Now, years later, he got £3,000 or something, which was a massive money at that time. But he was a Catholic. There was a rate collector in in Carrigallen shot. Again, no mention of he being Protestant. And there was a big notice up to boycott certain shops. Now, they tended to be Protestant, but there were Catholic shops in it. So my impression is, if you got in the way of the IRA, it didn't matter if you're Catholic, Protestant, but you're more likely to be suspect if you were Protestant.
But what was the perception of the reason for targeting Harrison? Because there was an exodus of Protestants from that part of Leitrim, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, overall, nationally, the exodus between 1911 and 1926 was about 30%. Leitrim had something like that overall, whereas the exodus of Catholics would only be 10%, you know, emigration.
Mm.
But the Methodist in the Ballinamore circuit, which was a Methodist division, probably covered, there were about four or five different circuits in Leitrim. But in the Methodist circuit of Ballinamore, which from 1912 to 26, the number of Methodists went down from 151 to 51, a 67% decrease. And actually that town land where Harrison was killed had 28 Protestants, I think it was, and 14 Catholics or something roughly like that. And now there's just one Protestant family. Now, there can be lots of different reasons.
You have discovered involvement of members of your own family, or of a member of your own family, in a killing, which is, I suppose, not altogether different from this. Tell us a little bit about that.
In fact, this Liam Kelly, who'd be a first cousin of mine, he was ordained a priest in 1978. And in December of that year, he got a phone call out of the blue from somebody in St. Davenant's, the psychiatric hospital in Monaghan, to say that a relative of his had died and would he come and make arrangements. The relative was a Michael Kelly, who'd be a first cousin of my mother and of Liam Kelly's mother. And he had just died in the hospital. We had never heard of him. Now, we had a whole lot of relatives, but in Ireland, you know most of your relatives. My mother, as a child, when she was living with an aunt for a few years, heard a reference to this man, but he was completely airbrushed. And why? This man, Michael Kelly, had joined the local IRA in West Cavan as an 18-year-old. And his first assignment, like going to Harrison, was to get arms from a local Protestant clergyman in Bonboy, only a few miles from where Harrison.
This is Finlay.
Yeah, and this happened 7 weeks after Harrison, we're talking about, was killed. So he went with the other IRA to the house and some confrontation happened. He was part of it and the Protestant minister was killed. Now, about 3 or 4 weeks later, my mother's first cousin was found wandering in a state of mental, he had a breakdown in the Midlands. And as usual, you were sent to the lunatic asylum. He was incarcerated in Monaghan. And that was 1921. We never heard of him until 1978. He had spent 57 years there.
And died there.
And died there. And completely airbrushed. And like my cousin, he said, like, I was a few miles up the road. He says, I'd have gone to visit him.
Hmm.
But what makes me really aware of this is that, like, the War of Independence isn't something that kind of happened out there. This is the reality of when people, you know, in a crisis, do something. And then I'm sure we'll hear cases in a while of people now will look back and say, oh, my God, why did I do that during a crisis?
Hmm. Liam McNiff, thank you very much indeed for joining us and bringing us the story of the killing of John Harrison and other activities in County Leitrim during the War of Independence. Would have been a much longer talk, a more extensive talk at the Hindsight Festival in Kells, and will be going online in the days ahead in our virtual Hindsight Festival online on www.hinterland.ie. Liam, thanks once again for that.